Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
You know, making movies is hard.
Welcome. This is the podcast about the struggle of being an independent filmmaker. I'm Mark Russell, the founding host of the podcast, and my sci-fi horror filmmaker. And my first feature film, The Alternate, is out now on digital, DVD, Tubi, and Amazon Prime. And my second feature is written, and the title I have is not good enough to share, so I will share it when I have a better title. But yeah, very exciting.
To be continued. I'm Liz Banishall. I'm a writer, director, producer who has directed two features, Bread and Butter and Speed of Life, and I'm currently in pre-production on my third, Best Friends Forever. I'm a distribution consultant who used to manage Sundance's Creative Distribution Initiative. On this Thursday bonus episode, we're going to play the interview from episode 222 from August 2019 with writer, director Kevin O'Brien, who talks about making his first feature film At the End of the Day and making the movie in his hometown. Ulrich thought this was a good pairing for Nathan, which I agree with, because they both raised their budgets for their films on their own and shot in their towns where they live, one in Florida and one in Arizona. After that, we play another round of The Game. But first, before we do that, don't forget to check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/mmihpodcast. It is how we keep the show going. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And without further bibble babble, here's our throwback interview with Kevin O'Brien.
This week, we are really excited to welcome writer-director Kevin O'Brien to the show. Welcome, Kevin.
Thanks.
So rather than me stumble through a terrible, terrible bio of you, I'd think that maybe it's better that you just give us your quick one-minute bio. Just tell us who you are, what you do, and why you're on the show.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I'm Kevin O'Brien. I'm a filmmaker, writer-director. I really got started in filmmaking later in life. I was always like a pretty creative person, but it wasn't until my early 30s that I really found my thing, that filmmaking was my thing. I was always kind of like the jack of all trades, master of none sort of person for a long time. And then I started doing some original, at the time I was on staff as a creative director at a church here in Lakeland where I live. And we did a lot of original creative things for every week. And that started being original short film projects. And I started doing that and just fell in love with the whole filmmaking process. And that's really where I decided that that's what I wanted to make my life about. So, about 10 years later now, I've had a company for 8 years called Journey Box Media, where we create short films on a regular basis, sell them online. And then we, I have my first feature film called At the End of the Day.
And Kevin, why this one? Why is this the first feature?
So I have a very religious background. The irony is that I'm not so religious currently, but I grew up in a very conservative Christian home, and my life is really framed in the conservative Christian world. When I was looking for a topic that, or you know, a story, you know, I think there are a lot of filmmakers and creative people who are like, some people know exactly what they're, you know, when I get the money, I know what my movie is going to be about. I didn't do that. I didn't have that for a long time. I didn't feel like I had a story worthy of an hour and a half, 2 hours for a movie. Through a series of events within my life and between my wife and I and our kids, and we have adopted twice, and so we just started like realizing how much bigger the world is than this little small view of the world that we had. And one of those things that we really started to change our views on was the way that the church treats and talks about the LGBTQ community. So I know that in a lot of the world, especially in more progressive cities, this is a thing. Well, you know, we just had Pride Month, so it was a big thing all over. But this specific issue is, depending on where we show it, it's sometimes it's people's response is, why is this still a thing that we need to talk about? But in the South and in more, not progressive areas, more conservative areas, it's still a very real, current issue that people are in danger of from their lives and because of religious rejection and, all of these things. So as we started changing our views on that, this was a thing that, that I felt like this was a topic that I could talk about from my perspective that hadn't been done quite in this tone or in this narrative form. There are a ton, there's a bunch of good documentaries about how faith and Christianity, really kind of, rejects the LGBTQ community. There have been, some narratives recently in the just within the past few years that have come out about that. But I thought this would be a thing that I could really get behind and get excited about and really just kind of like make a, say a thing while entertaining. So that was a really long answer. Sorry.
Yeah, so to get really like personal and go into this a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
I mean, did you kind of go through the same sort of transformation that Dave went through in the movie at some point in your life, like years ago? Or like, can you talk about that a little bit? And like,
Yeah. And actually it wasn't even that long ago. I mean, it was when I decided that I didn't have the story, but when I decided that like, this is the tension, the church's acceptance or rejection of the LGBTQ community. When I landed on that as the main conflict in the movie, I didn't have a story, but I was still kind of learning and researching and reading and, it kind of in the middle. I knew the historic view of the church was wrong. I felt that like in my soul, and I was headed that direction. But I still had a lot of questions. And a lot of like, I didn't have answers yet. So, so it was kind of in the middle of that, but I certainly went through, and I think a lot of people do who grew up like me go through that kind of progression that Dave did, in the movie where we grew up and most of our lives, we hear a certain thing and we just accept it as truth. But we didn't have any real relationships and the thing about a lot in those kind of churches and those communities is that questions aren't really like questions are frowned upon. Questions are they kind of challenge things. So you're not really allowed if you do ask a question, you get like a very simple, clear, this is the way it is. Don't ask that question again sort of thing. So, so it was definitely out of that path that Dave takes is. For a lot of us, it is based on the relationships and the people that we meet, and that kind of we realize that the way we've been told the world works is not the way it actually works.
So, is the that pastor character in the movie, is that based on like people that you actually know who are actually like that in real life, or? I mean, because coming from San Francisco Bay Area, it's just like, a lot of this seems really crazy. I mean, I know it exists for sure. Like, I'm not saying that I don't realize that people, aren't accepting in other parts of the country and even here, in certain places. But I mean, did you draw from real life people, to kind of create some of these characters?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, but when you're saying the pastor character, I'm assuming you're actually talking about the guy at the university,
the dean.
Okay. I mean, he's not specific one character. It's, in my mind, he represents like the institution, like religious institutions, not, a lot of times it is with conservative Christian colleges, but it's also with churches, with denominations, with the Southern Baptist Convention, the United Methodist Church just this past year, just in January and February had a worldwide vote within their denomination about whether they would hire openly LGBT people as clergy and whether they would officially as a denomination marry same-sex couples. And they, because it's a worldwide denomination, it actually got voted down. And there's this all year has been the United Methodist Church kind of like try to figure out how to re-engage that conversation. So lots of lots of real world people. Almost all of the characters within the movie are heavily based on people that I've met or had deep relationships with, or are kind of like a collaboration of a lot of people I've met, you know. So Gordon, the dean, is definitely like a composite of all of the, you know, older, white, cisgender, straight guys who kind of run the world, if we're being honest about it, but specifically within religious communities that their view is that they are doing the loving thing, that they have the truth, and that anything in opposition to that is challenging the truth and challenging, you know, reality.
Well, I'm the dick who didn't watch the movie, so all my questions are not about the movie.
No, that's great. That's fine.
Well, I want to go back to, you know, the idea of why this film. I mean, it's something that I believe Ulrich and I, and maybe Tim, talked about a while ago. Like, how do you decide what your first feature is going to be? And I run into a lot of people who, you know, they put a lot of pressure on themselves to make that first feature really say something. So I just wanted to go back to that, you know, that question of this movie and your previous relationship with content and religion. What is the message you're trying to get across with this film?
So the first part of that is that I don't know. I mean, this was my first movie. Like, this is the way it went. I can't change the history of when my first movie was made. It was not the smartest, if I was to make a decision based simply on career or you know, finances or chance of success. I'm doing lots of air quotes here. This was not the right choice.
Wait, but what would you have done?
I don't know. And that's the thing. Like, even when I told my wife that this was, you know, before I had the story, but when this is the conflict, especially with, you know, my business is dealing in religious communities and selling short films to religious communities. So when I told her, like, this is the topic that I want to kind of center the thing around, she was like, okay, let's take this slow, let's figure this out, let's see if this is the right thing. And so several times I tried to, like, put this aside and do something else, or, you know, find another story for my first feature and come back to this later, but I don't know. All I can explain is that there was this, like, drive inside of me to tell this story. I felt like the window for this to be applicable was closing at the time. Although now we realize that it's not, like, our country has not progressed as a whole nearly as far as we thought we were in 2015. I felt like I was running from it. I couldn't not do this story at this time. It was just one of those things where, like, I do feel like whatever that first thing, whatever you're working on for that first feature, I do feel like it needs, because it's so much longer of a process than you think it's going to be at the beginning. It has to be something that you are, like, like, obsessed with, not just passionate about, but I feel like you got to be obsessed with it, at least in my situation. So I feel like it was what it had to be for me.
So did you not really get the kind of support that you thought you might get from the religious community behind getting this film made?
Well, I knew I would not get religious community support behind this movie.
Well,
but
aren't there churches that support, you know, all lifestyles and don't have that old worldview?
Yes.
But there's maybe less of them. Is that the problem?
No. Well, there are certainly less of them, a lot less of them. The other thing I did have this whole, which I've later discovered, and throughout this whole process, you know, continually evolving and learning, is that I certainly, when I'm honest with myself, I had this, like, straight white savior complex coming into this, that, like, this, I'm going to tell this story that's going to change so many lives, and the LGBTQ community is going to, like, love this thing that I'm doing, and they're all going to get behind it. Of course, this is such a beautiful thing. Why would that not happen? Right. And so, what I quickly discovered is that, you know, this community has been fighting their battles for years and years and years. And I'm this, like, new guy showing up saying, hey, I'm making this movie thing. And they're like, yeah, that's great. We're trying to stay alive and fight for equal rights in our country, you know, like, fight for marriage equality, which is now, in 2015, happened in our country. But there's conversion therapy that they're fighting. There are, you know, work in my state of Florida. There are a lot of things there that they're working on to pass legally, like, you know, banning conversion therapy and equal work protections, regardless of gender or sexual identity or orientation. So everyone was like, they're all doing their things already. And when I came in trying to, it was definitely harder to raise money than I expected it to be. I knew it would be hard, but I feel like it was actually, I feel like every step of this process was harder than I expected it to. And again, if it wasn't that thing that you're like obsessed about, then I don't know how you would follow through with it.
Well, it's kind of a humor situation when you look at it from the outside, right? It's like all we hear about is religious films doing well commercially. And you picked an aspect of a religious film that makes it kind of difficult for distribution, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So I guess I personally love that you picked the film that was itching at you. That's like the number one thing I tell people to do, even if it feels like the wrong film or whatever reservations you have. You should always make the film that keeps you up at night. But thinking about the marketplace, thinking about distribution, thinking of all the filmmakers who may be listening to you right now, what would you advise filmmakers to do differently?
Oh, that's so tough. Like, so the other big thing that I've realized, or that seems to be the case, is that one of the challenging things about filmmaking is that there's no like one path, you know? There's no like, this is the way. There are similar steps that you take, but almost every movie that's made has its own unique path. Every filmmaker that gets to the point where they're making a feature film has their own unique way that they've made it. It's not like you go to school for this many years and then you get licensed in this thing and then you go, you know, apprentice for a year or whatever. So much of this I learned as much as I could as I was doing it and before I was doing it. I didn't go to film school. I'm, you know, self-taught throughout the whole process. So it was hard because I like for distribution, there's this whole thing, which I know you, Liz, you're very familiar with because you do the Sundance Creative Distribution Initiative
thing. Whatever this thing is.
Yeah, this thing. Like there are no numbers out in the world whatsoever. So it's impossible to know, like, even if someone does get some sort of distribution deal, whether how that distribution happened, because it is a big part of who you know and right person at the right time. The whole festival process, I've even learned, had several conversations about like that. It certainly helps to have certain relationships before you, plan out your strategy of festival submissions and where that's going
to
go.
Wait, Kevin, to interrupt you, it's just, yeah. This is so crazy that I noticed this the other day, and I hope you guys don't mind if I just divert us for
no,
one point.
No,
I was thinking of the festivals that my film got into, my second feature had been getting into. I know the heads of five out of the seven of the festivals that we got into.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything, but I'm saying something here.
You're saying that's why you got in because of your connections?
I think it's probably 75% of why I got in.
Yeah. So
but my question that I have, Kevin, sorry, really quick, just while we're on this topic. So Liz, how many festivals did you submit to?
Oh my gosh. Well, probably like 30 at this point. Yeah.
So your ratio is probably just a little bit higher than the norm, right? Because it's usually like 5 to 10% or something that you get into, and
that's
you
true.
Got into what you said, 5 out of 30. So
well, and also I'm applying to these festivals knowing that I know the heads of them, right?
Right.
So that's impacting my decisions that I'm making, but it's still like I've been rejected by some of these festivals in the past.
Right. But the point is, it's really tough. That's
yeah.
the point.
It's yeah. it's stupid also. It's stupid.
It's stupid. It's tough and it's stupid.
When I, my big like moment realizing that was we had a fiscal sponsor, the Film Collaborative, for our film, so that when people donated to through the Film Collaborative, it was tax deductible for them. We used that combined with our, to get a good chunk of our money through some donations, and then also through our Seed and Spark, our second or our third our second successful crowdfunding campaign, our third overall campaign, during post-production. But so through the Film Collaborative, I found out later after I had already submitted to a ton of festivals that they had like a film festival section of their that will help you through film festival process. And I found that out later. I don't know. I'm sure it was there and I read it at some point and then I forgot. So the way that works is that a representative from there who is connected to a bunch of festivals, they watch your film and then they give you feedback on what festivals they think would be a good fit for, where they should go and all that. So my first conversation with this person, with his representative afterwards, they said, what festivals have you submitted to? And I was, you know, like all the regular big ones or whatever. And he's like, and so what people do you know with those festivals? What connections do you have to those festivals that you submitted to? And I said, none. This is my first thing. Like, I don't have. And so he, like, I'm sure he didn't laugh at that point, but I felt like he, like, you know, like, that's how I remember the conversation going, was that it was, like, comical that I submitted all of these to all of these festivals, spending money on this thing when I didn't have a chance on getting in because so many of the slots fill up first from connections, from relationships that they have. And so to like illustrate the point, there was a big LGBT festival that we were hoping to get into, and we had already been, well, we hadn't been rejected yet. It was like it was like 3 weeks away from their notification date. So I guess we kind of already had been rejected because usually know before then if on most of the bigger festivals. But the, so he's like, well, I have this director on, like, he just texted the director of the program, the main programmer, and said, like, this, I have this movie, have you seen it? He's like, yeah, we've seen it. It's probably not going to get in, but I'll give it another look. And then he gave it another look. They, like, actually watched it again and then said, no, it's, we don't have a spot for it. But, like, that, like, to that point of, like, he just texted the guy and he's like, yeah, I'll give it. Like, it is, that just helped me realize,
it's who you
I don't know,
are.
That it is a huge, so much of it is, and yes, of course, there are outliers and people that, whatever, but. I don't know. I think having those realities, I don't know that it doesn't necessarily, it doesn't change the game because you, whatever, but that's the way the game is.
Well, you still have to
just
apply.
Just knowing. Like, right, just, right. You still got to try.
Well, also because you need the track record. So if you come at them with your second feature, you can say, well, I applied with my first. I mean, it's a stupid world. But I just wanted to advocate people still trying.
So, I just wanted to, this is more of a comment than a question, but just, it's kind of interesting with your film because, you know, it's kind of almost told from the perspective of the other side of the coin, right? Because you're basically coming at it from the church side in a way, you know?
Yep.
I mean, with this guy. And I don't think I've ever seen a movie that from that perspective. And I don't know if there have been others, you know, where it's sort of this, like, coming at it from the side of the conservative and then becoming more progressive and by the end of the film. But yeah, I mean, that might explain why the LGBTQ community didn't really rally behind it in the same way that they might have another project, you know. But, like, I was just thinking, like, did you try to find, like, because there must be, like, some churches that you could have found, like, I don't know, like, the Glide Church in San Francisco is a good example. Like, they're like a big supporter of the LGBTQ community and, you know, their religious organization. So it's like someone like that, like, who could understand what you are trying to do and then really rally behind it, like, would have been like the kind of partner that you might have, that would have really helped, you know? But I imagine, like, that's got to be really hard to find, especially from where you're located, you know, because you're kind of like in the heart of where those things are less, you know, present, I guess, you know.
So there's this yes, that you are correct in that, and I feel like my takeaway, I guess, is either that I'm not that's just not my thing is pitching to someone to join onto my project in that right. capacity, because I feel like I, for the first 3 or 4 years of this project, putting this together before we actually had any sort of money to actually shoot it, like, that was, and in the 2 years after, like, that's been one of my biggest focuses, was trying to find partners who would support this, who would get behind it, And again, that's why I just don't know where the disconnect was. I mean, the nationwide companies, you know, the national organizations, their responses I kept getting back from was, and I understand, because you know, for a crowdfunding campaign, they can't be sending out a bunch of crowdfunding campaigns, especially from a guy that they don't know who he is. They don't know what this thing is going to be.
Right.
But then even afterward, you know, so I understood that throughout the pre-stuff about, like, they don't have this thing. They don't know what it's going to be. They don't know what message, what any of that. So, yeah. So that didn't happen beforehand, except on, like, a personal basis, individual communities, but nothing like, you know, a full denomination or a full organization getting behind it. Even afterward, go ahead.
I just have one more question about story, and then we can get off of it, because I know Liz hasn't really seen the movie. But it just, like, your lead character is a really interesting challenge to me, and I'm sort of dealing with the same challenge with my feature, because my character makes some very questionable choices, you know, in the film, and you know, you need the audience to be behind him, even though, you know, he's making the wrong choices. So I'm just curious, like, how did you tackle that? Because your character makes some really terrible choices early on in the movie, and then as he goes, he starts to make less terrible choices, basically. But what was your process for trying to make this guy likable while he's doing these terrible things?
Well, I actually did not. I didn't approach it at all from making him likable. Like, I guess kind of like the closest thing you could say to, like, the inspiration of a character of a movie that I really loved that had the, like, least likable character, that a very dislikable character, was, like, Bad Words, Jason Bateman in Bad Words. We're like, this guy's just a terrible guy. It's just a terrible guy. No, it's okay.
So good.
So good. And from what I remember about it, I mean, I haven't watched it in a while, so maybe there is, but, like, he's just a bad character, you know, like, I didn't approach it from, I need this guy to be likable. I just approached it from, like, I actually want people to not like him. And hopefully by the end, like, they're okay with him. Because in my mind, he's not real, like, he's the lead character, but he's not really, like, in a weird way, he's not the hero of the story. I think the support group that, like, he kind of goes along with, like, that he gets connected with, I think they are kind of like the drive, the grace and forgiveness that they have is kind of like the hero of the story. But so I didn't approach it that way, but I will say, like, it wasn't until, for whatever, I don't know how I missed this, I think Stephen Shane Martin, the actor who played Dave, he kept trying to, like, drop hints to this throughout, and he would, you know, ask questions all the time as we were filming it, and we'd change a bunch of stuff while we're filming it. But it wasn't until, like, I was editing the thing and I, like, saw all of these things back to back. I don't know. I was like, holy crap, this dude is terrible. Like, this is a terrible guy that I wrote. Why did I write him such, like, as such a jerk, as such a terrible person? So I don't know. I've always been a little leery of that, like, you got to make him likable kind of mentality anyway. Like, because of so many, you know, things like Jason Bateman in Bad Words. Like I don't need a likable character to follow a story along.
Yeah. That was, like, when I was pitching the movie to, like, all these executives a few years ago, that was the number one note I got from everybody, was that my character wasn't likable. When they read my script or even when they heard my pitch, they were just like, you got to have a character that the audience can get behind. And I totally agree that that's not necessarily always the case, that you can have, like, an anti-hero or a character that you don't agree with their choices as you're watching them go through the movie. But yeah, I don't know. I was wondering, because, like, I'm trying to just deal with that the best I can. And yeah, it's interesting to hear that you just leaned into it heavily, which is good, you know, and it worked, because I didn't like it. I hated the guy watching the movie.
right.
Like, I really, really didn't like him at all. So yeah, but it's a good job.
But a key point to this is that I had zero investors. So no, I did not get any investors for this movie. So maybe that's a lesson to be learned too. If you don't have Jason Bateman and you have an unlikable guy, you got to figure out a way to pay for it on your own.
So let's talk about that, because, I mean, I'm fundraising for my third feature right now. And a number one question is always balance, right? How do you have a day job while fundraising? How do you convince people to come on board? How did you fund this film?
So the actual production budget of it, which was, it was $55,000 to actually shoot the thing. Cause we, at some point we were like, we gotta do what we can. We're never, if we're just waiting around to raise the whole amount, in the future for my future projects, I don't ever want to do it this way again. But for this one, I felt like I had to, like I was going to just be waiting forever and ever if I didn't actually shoot this thing and have that part of it done and then worry about post-production later. So again, not a like long-term strategy, not a career move necessarily, other than you actually have a feature film shot and you're moving towards having something done. So that part of the budget, our total budget, I know you're going to ask about specific numbers and we don't ever hear numbers, so I'll say it, I don't care. So as our total budget was $120,000, like in the end after post-production and everything, and it was about 55 to 60 to shoot, to actually shoot the production of it, to get it done. So that amount of money was raised from a combination of a Kickstarter campaign after our first failed Kickstarter campaign, because I set the goal too high and I foolishly chose Kickstarter, which you get all or nothing. You know, that's a key takeaway, is to go with something that lets you keep whatever you got.
Aww. Wait,
so was your Kickstarter successful, or did you...
Our first one, our goal was $75,000, and I realized that I did not... Now, looking back, I did not have, like Liz was talking about before we started recording, I did not have the network, I didn't have the reach to supply that. But we got to $35,000 of that, which is awesome, except that Kickstarter doesn't let you keep anything if you don't reach the whole thing. So then we like tried to do a real quick, like... we didn't make it, but you can still put the same amount towards our PayPal account. And so we got some money that way. And then we did a quick, another Kickstarter for like $20,000, and we got that goal. So we got some of it that way. And then we got another chunk, about $30,000, donated from two specific individuals are here locally in Lakeland and wanted to support the movie. So that gave us enough to shoot the movie.
So when you did your PayPal after your Kickstarter failed, how many people put through into the PayPal?
Oh, it was only like 10, maybe.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it was not much. Most of the whatever we got came from the redo on the Kickstarter.
Well, that's crazy though, because like in a way, it's like you got whatever 20 something from the Kickstarter that you have to pay the fees on, but then you got 10 with no fees. Which is pretty great.
Oh, no, no. I meant, sorry, I meant 10 people.
Oh, 10 people.
Not 10,000.
Oh, I thought you meant 10,000.
No, 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 like, no. 10 people. No, I think it was probably like 3,000 or 4,000 total.
Okay. That's still great. With no fees. That's good.
So for the two, I'm going to call them patrons, who gave the big chunk of money to fill out your budget, what do you attribute that action to? Like, what do you think you said or did to convince them?
That's interesting. So one of them, the one that gave the smaller chunk actually, was who was initially going to invest to buy units of the movie. He was really the only one that ever, like, well, we had a couple of things that were like, we were like kind of dragging us along, but he was certainly the first that we kind of made that connection. So that was actually going to invest. And then when I took the time to, like, when we were actually going to sign the papers and do the check, he was like, I'll just donate the money instead, which, you know, is great.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
It's great. Except that I had spent like thousands of dollars on attorney's fees to get to get this investment paperwork that I never used. So that wasn't great. But
you can use it as a template for the next one.
That's true. Positive thinking. Liz, I love it.
I'm in the same boat, Kevin. I spent a lot of money on lawyer fees for my paperwork that and I didn't need, because the producer I have now is a lawyer. Yeah. But I mean, but there's a reason. I mean, but it all worked out. It was worth it in the end. So
you know. And you learn and you move on, whatever.
Exactly.
Or maybe I haven't moved on yet. My main initial connection to that family was my wife actually like worked for the school board here in Polk County and had a relationship with his wife, with the donor patron's wife. So like there was, it was a, back to the to you know, you know, I don't know if I would have had that connection. I mean, he is a very generous person here in our city as anyway, so he is constantly getting involved in things like this, but I don't know that it would have been to that point. And then the second, which is the bigger chunk, was $20,000, was like this guy's father. So it all started with a personal connection that, but it was also, you know, it was still something that the whole thing, the idea of the story, it was something that they were supportive of, that they were behind, that they wanted to be in the world, you know? So I don't know that if I was making like a, you know, just a fun horror movie or something, I don't know that they would have contributed to that, but they felt the importance of it. I think specifically living in the city that we live in, because it is a pretty conservative county. It's a pretty conservative area. So I think they felt like this was something that needed to be made.
Well, but did you, I guess, digging deeper, like, did you have a PowerPoint? Did you have a lookbook that you sent them? Did you do an elevator pitch to them? Like, what are these things that were, because I've never done a lot of those things. I mean, so I'm curious, like, what was effective in terms of materials that you've gathered?
Sure. And I'm actually happy to, like, I'm just saying this as I'm doing it, so maybe I'll regret it later, but like, I'm happy to, if you, Ulrich, if you ever want to, like, post it to, like, I could send you my examples of my lookbook
send
and all of that.
Send the lookbook. We'd love,
I mean,
to
I just,
post it as an example.
Cool. So, so it was, I definitely had, like, I spent some time as a graphic designer, so that was one of my things that, like, I do a lot of. So I designed this really nice, slick kind of lookbook that had kind of the idea of the story and some of the actors, like, if, you know, dream world I would have gone after, that we would have tried to sign to it if we had a bigger budget. Notes about the music, about this, you know, how, what kind of tone we want to set, what we want the feel, why, and then like detail. And then there was a section for investors and units and all of that. So there was that. I also had like a one page version of that I kind of adapted to later. That was kind of like a quick overview as we were trying to just get interest from investors. That kind of just gave some of the numbers and a little bit of the details. And I mean, but I definitely took like that whole part of this process, the raising money and making it a real thing, like I took very seriously from the beginning. So I got a domain and launched the website like the day that I was done with the screenplay, endofthedayfilm.com. I had a website up, you know, talking about what the movie was. I actually had a pitch trailer. We did that for the crowdfunding campaign. Like we filmed a pitch trailer where, like, if you watched it, it looked like we already shot the movie. But
yeah, everyone should go to your website. Different. I mean, it's like the example of what I ask filmmakers to do. I mean, the pop-up asking for the email address, like the very explicit breakdown of like how people can see the film. It's very good.
Thanks. So yeah, so I took all of that very seriously, putting together those packets and that whole thing. And I think that's kind of what, for me personally, while yes, I have a movie and it all worked out, I just felt like the whole process was like trying this thing, trying this one step that you heard worked for someone else and doing it as professionally as you can. If that doesn't work, try the next thing that this other person tried that, you know, and do it as professionally and as on top of it as you can. And that was really like quality and persistence, you know, I guess are the two words that like, I just can't give up and you've got to do things as good as you can as the highest quality.
So let's jump into the future a little bit now. So we were talking about film festivals briefly before, but let's talk about like in the end, like how many film festivals did you apply to? And then how many film festivals did you actually end up getting into?
We submitted to, I want to say it was probably like 50.
Wow. Good number.
And we ended up with eight or nine that we got into. And that was an interesting thing because, you know, of course, my first submission back, my first like response back was an acceptance at the Oxford Film Festival in Mississippi. And so I was like, oh, my first one back, acceptance, this is going to be awesome. But of course, I'm like, well, I'm going to get into a bigger festival than that. So let me sorry guys, but I don't want, I'm going to pass on your festival like a terrible person that
well,
I am.
Well, they're right before South By, and I think that's kind of problematic because that's a really good festival. Oxford's really good.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, but you're still waiting to hear back. I totally get back as well.
Yeah, it was tough. I felt terrible. And then especially it was like my payment for that was getting the next 20 rejections in a row. So that was great. And then our premiere was at Dances with Films in Los Angeles.
I think Ulrich was about to do the same thing I'm doing, which is we have to unpack that because it's like, don't we suffer enough as independent filmmakers? And yet we all feel bad because we like told a festival that like could make or break our career that we wanted to evaluate what the future of film could be. Like, I think it's crazy because I did the same thing to Oxford, actually, Kevin.
Yeah.
And I feel really bad about it, but it's like, if we got into South By, our entire careers would be different. So I don't think that we should feel bad about things like that.
Well, and they were actually, they reached out, Oxford reached out, and like we played at this year's Oxford Film Festival.
Oh, good.
So that was great. So I still got to experience, they were very kind. But yeah, it's especially when it's your first one, like you, again, like you think and you hear these stories and you listen to podcasts of like, this is how, you know, you get a successful or get a distribution deal. Cause in my mind, again, from the very beginning, I was thinking distribution from the very beginning. So the plan, you know, the A plan is to get into a top tier festival and at least get some sort of press that you can turn into some sort of distribution deal. That's plan A. And so I feel like, yes, while it stinks and in the moment, like you've got it's an unfortunate email to send. They didn't spend the last 5 years making this movie. I spent the last 5 years of my life making this movie. And so I need to do what's right for the movie. Or at least give it a chance, you know?
Yeah, totally. Well, it makes sense. I mean, you know, I think like the chance of getting into those big festivals, it's just too big to pass up. And I don't know what I'll do when I'm in that situation, if I'm as lucky enough to be that situation with my film. But I don't know. It sounds like you made the right choice, though, because Dances with Films, that's a pretty good festival, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think the other thing that this year has, like after taking it to these eight festivals, or I think we were in nine, but one of them was in Italy and I couldn't go to that one. But was kind of like a better, maybe a more healthier view of festivals and their place in this whole thing. Like I feel like early on and while I was making it, like I put way too much of my energy or hopes into a film festival and what those experiences were like. When I was there, it's almost like every time I went to a film festival leading up to it, I'm like, yeah, this is gonna be so much fun. I'm so excited. I can't wait. And then a lot of the time while I'm there, I'd be like, what am I doing here? like that. I don't know. I mean, the best part about it for me was seeing other films and talking to other people, just like talking filmmaking with these other filmmakers. But there's a lot of time where I'm just like, why am I spending all of this time at this place? Why am I giving my movie to this festival that they're they're not making a ton of money, but
You get no cut of the ticket sales.
You get no cut of ticket sales. You're spending money to be there. Like it's, you're spending money to it's your job to promote your film at their festival. So even though you're at Dances with Films, that's an amazing festival. But I was also at Saturday morning in Los Angeles as a screen time, or like 12:30 on a Saturday in Los Angeles. And we didn't have like a huge turnout, you know, even though we had pushed and we'd connected with all those churches in the area and all the PFLAG groups and like done everything by the book and spent money on postcards and all this stuff. And we didn't have, like, we still had a good time and our cast went out because it's Los Angeles. But So I think my view of festivals is now to like still enjoy it for an experience of enjoying this thing that you've made with other people, but not, you know, not putting a lot of emotional weight onto this thing that's going to be there.
Well, did you think that like there were just going to be lots of distributors at these festivals or agents or managers or people who would just like see your movie and like want to pick you up? Was like that kind of your expectation, or like what were you expecting to get out of the festivals before you actually showed up at them?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And it's not that, because I knew, I mean, I, I knew that even Dance with Films, it's a great, it's a lot of fun festival. It's in the Chinese theaters downtown Los Angeles or whatever in Hollywood. But I knew that it's not a festival that a ton of distributors go to. So I wasn't expecting that. But there were probably about half of the festivals that I went to, like a lot of times I didn't even feel like people knew who I was or like knew, not like this is, I'm this person, but like, I don't know. It felt like sometimes there wasn't even like an appreciation for the film that was there. I don't know. It was right. a weird sort of thing.
I know what you mean. Like I've showed up to film festivals and be like, hey, yeah, I came all this way. And then like, you know,
they're like, here's your badge. Go on, move on.
Or even finding the contact person sometimes can be hard, but that's usually just because it's a smaller film festival or whatever, you know? But yeah, I think you got to embrace the experience. You know?
No. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Once you embrace it, then it's just a good time. You know, another thing, did you try this? Like, this is a tip I heard. I can't remember which filmmaker who was on the show said it, but what they did when they had their movie premiere at a festival was they just reached out to a ton of distributors and production companies and said, and invited them to the screening and was just like, hey, we're doing the screening of our film at this so-and-so film festival. It's in LA. Come see the movie, blah, blah, blah. And then like, you know, 90% of them say no, like we can't make it. But they also say, oh, but send us a screener if you can. And then they send a screener. And then that's sort of a way they get their foot in. Did you try doing anything like that?
Yes. I mean, probably not to as many as we should. Here's the other thing that I learned about myself was that I thought that I was pacing myself. Like I thought that I was going, but I realized that I was going at like 99% for like 4 years, 4-5 years, you know, like putting all of my energy into this thing. And so this isn't necessarily about the film festival, but this is actually about, I'm sure we'll get to later, about when the movie was released. Like once we had a release of it on iTunes and Amazon, I had like 3 weeks in me of promoting it, and then I was just like done. Like I was like, I can't try anymore. I've been trying to get energy behind this thing for so many years. Like I can't talk about this movie anymore. So I don't know if that was again me like expelling too much energy earlier or not knowing what's coming up. But I felt like that a little bit too at the festival, even though the movie was just now coming out and people were able to see it. I don't know. It's this weird thing of like you want everyone to see this thing that you've been working on, but when you step back and look at the whole festival idea, like maybe if you're lucky, 200 people get to see this movie. You know what I mean? Like it's the festivals are really small audience, really small group of people to see the movie. But of course, if you get the right person there, of course, that's like the hope. That's like the carrot at the end of the stick is like. The right person might see it and submit it, you know, suggest it to someone else.
Well, you're pointing to something I wanted to say, which is like, because there's no path, which we talked about earlier, Kevin, there's no path to making films. There's no path to success for independent filmmakers. It almost feels like you have 5,000 options and no options at the same time.
Yes.
And so what's so frustrating, which I'm hearing and I experience as well, is you always think you could do more, but at the same time, like you don't know what's going to be most helpful.
So, right.
Like I've started to just set like boundaries for myself, which is, you know, like, yes, I could spend the next 3 weeks contacting every distributor and every publicist and really working my ass off. Or, you know, I can ration those reserves and do like the 5 things that I think could be most helpful and then use my energy for something else. And then just think about the next project and the next project and make it the long game. But I think it's really kind of frustrating to feel like you could be doing more when you're doing so much already.
That is exactly it, Liz. Holy crap. You just like nailed the frustration of it because there are literally thousands of things you could be doing. And they're all shots in the dark.
Right. And no matter how many you're doing, there's always more. Like you could be doing 1,000 things and there would still be more things that you could do.
Absolutely.
That could make a difference, you know, maybe, you know.
Maybe. That's funny.
But just to follow up with that, ultimately, which is kind of like a sad lesson to learn just for myself, is that when you're in demand, it will be obvious, right? And we have to work to get to the point where we're in demand. And however you set up your foundation, which you clearly did very well, Kevin, and which you're doing great, Ulrich, at doing, it's like we always think we're at the tipping point, but I think the tipping point will be incredibly obvious to us when we're in demand.
Yes, that is we're all waiting for that tipping point.
Right.
We're all waiting
That positivity, Liz, like when we're
when it happens.
Yeah.
It's going to happen for all of us one day. So briefly, Kevin, I wanted to talk about your distribution. So like you went to these 9 film festivals. It wasn't, you know, the big experience necessarily that you thought it was going to be. But like, how did you work out your distribution for the film?
Well, I do feel like I've just realized as I was listening to myself talk that I feel like I was very negative about the whole festival thing. And I don't want to be that. Like, I loved this past year. It was a fantastic time. I love going to film festivals, and it was great. I think for me, it just helped me get an unromanticized view of what that is. So I think probably one thing that would probably help for filmmakers to do is go to, like, I'm in Florida, so there's not a ton of large film festivals around here, so I didn't have that experience. I didn't know what to expect. So probably going to these film festivals beforehand and talking with the filmmakers, and probably like not just the filmmakers of the very popular movies that have the sold-out crowds. That's the other tough thing about Los Angeles is that like a lot of the films there were like hometown films. A lot of filmmakers live in Los Angeles, and so they would have like a whole cast and crew there and for their movies. And when I come from Florida, we brought like 10 people with us. So I got off track, though. What was your question, Ark?
Well, I wanted to know, like, so for the distribution, how did you figure that out? Because I kind of know where you ended up with distribution, but I want you to just to hear your story of how you landed where you are with your distribution.
Yeah, so that was, I mean, another thing of having 5,000 options and no options at the same time. So leading up to Dancing with Films, where, you know, I'm trying to email all of the distributors, letting them know that we'll be there, trying to get them to come or at least see a screener. I did hire a publicist for the premiere for Dance with Films. And really though, like as I was really, what I learned was that like that premiere, the publicist, he was helping me like make that thing feel as big of a thing as it could be to pique interest from distributors and from other people throughout the thing. So that whole game. And we got a few, we sent out a bunch of screeners. We got a few things of specific interest, or we had some people request screeners and they'd watch them. But there was really, we didn't get any interest from what weren't ultimately just service providers. It wasn't a distribution deal. It was, you know, you pay us this up front and we'll distribute we'll get your movie on all these platforms and you'll, you know, they didn't say this, but you'll never see any money from it. But it was ultimately like paying forward, paying them to do this thing. We were in talks with one company they actually did like send an offer, to us, but it was, like $4,000. So, that was moving on, and they said, you know, they were like, well, what number would you like? Let's start with like what you'd like to do it. But by that point, I was pretty sure, because here's my experience.
And was that $4,000 for like domestic rights or
no?
For...
That was world. Maybe it was domestic, because at that point I probably had my foreign sales agent.
And then, so, how did you find your foreign sales agent? Was that through your PR rep that you hired, or?
Yeah, so that was through one of the connections that I can't remember if it was through my publicist that I hired out there, or if that was just one of the people that I emailed, or they were just going. It was Prolific Pictures. They just, you know, looked at a bunch of stuff from Dance with Films, but fairly new. Our conversations back and forth, they were really the only people that I felt like got the movie and what it was. So my experience with trying to do this like weird thing in this genre, this, what, you know, people automatically put my movie in a faith-based genre. And so people would either try and do that with it or just put it as like an LGBT movie. And it's not really either of those, even though it deals with both of those. It's like, it's not what the audience expects from either of those films, from either of those genres. So
wait, you went with Prolific Films? Sorry to interrupt.
Yes. Yeah.
I really, is this, sorry, I know them. I met with them and I actually think that they seem decent and nice and hardworking. And
no, I like them a lot. Like, I like Michael a lot. Yeah. He's, that's why I went with
that's
them.
Cool.
Like, he was, we had a great conversation afterwards. I felt like he got it. I mean, he told me, you know, like, this is going to be a really hard sell because of what it is, especially internationally. And they didn't require any money up front. And they had a low cap on what they would spend. Like, and I was like, yeah, let's try this. Like, I went into this whole thing from the beginning not expecting anything internationally just because of what the movie is. And it feels like a very American culture movie right now. So so anything with them would have been kind of like a bonus sort of thing. So they sent me like a, I don't remember what the term is, but like basically like an estimate of what they think they could get from
projections.
You
know,
projections, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
For over the next several years internationally. And my thought was like, even if it's like half of that or a quarter of that, then it's something that's more than I have now for international. Yeah. So yeah, so we went with them and that was last summer, I think. They've taken it to most of the markets so far. They're like continually in conversations with people. We've sold Taiwan, which is our one international territory that we've sold. And it was supposed to, I like kept looking for stuff, but it was supposed to come out actually like in theaters in June in Taiwan this year. So that would have been cool. I've heard it happen, but I don't have any proof, and I've looked online. I can't get any proof.
Can you talk about the number that territory brought in, or can you not reveal that?
No, I don't know. I guess I can. I mean, it was like $4,000 for that territory.
Okay. Nice. And that's like what, like 50%? How much of that is like chipping away at their, you know, that at their minimum that they need to cover?
Their cap was, I'm blanking actually on the number right now. It's not enough to cover the cap for sure. So
it's like
I won't
around 20,000 or something.
No, the cap is like, it's between 5 to 10.
Oh, 5 to 10. Oh, okay. So, oh, yeah. Nice. There you go. So close, though.
Close.
I mean, if it was five, then like you know, maybe two more territories, and you'll be in good shape.
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, and so they, you know, part of his whole thing with me, and part of it I appreciated again, like that he was honest about what the movie was, and then that he was, you know, he was being honest about we're kind of starting in this thing. You know, we are filmmakers, but we're starting in this sales rep world. So. I don't know. It was like a right time, right place, right relationship sort of thing. So domestically. Yeah. So I was pretty sure from the beginning because of I'd been, you know, my plan was from the beginning for these past 5 years working on these relationships with these churches and organizations that are doing this work, that I was pretty sure that I was going to be able to find the audience better than these, you know, than any sort of distributor, because it didn't fit so nicely into a clear genre. So that's what other, you know, unless we were like blown away with an offer, which we weren't ever, the plan was to self-distribute it. So, so we did, thanks to Liz's suggestion, we used Quiver for getting onto iTunes and Google Play. And we used Amazon Video Direct to get it onto Amazon.
Nice.
Which is free. So, I mean, it's free to get your movie on Amazon. And it's not included with Prime. People have to buy it or rent it. But it doesn't cost anything to get on their platform, which is amazing.
So talk about that a little bit. So when you went on Amazon, you decided not to go Prime. And that was specifically because you make more money if you have it for sale for rent on Amazon?
Well, I mean, from everything I heard, you don't make any money. Like, there's not a chance of making money if it's on Prime. And I had a little bit of experience with that, just a little back end experience, because I had a short film that I put on Amazon Prime. I didn't have any intentions to, but I was like, it's free. It's a 10-minute short film. I put it on there, and I would get like, I don't know. I mean, we never did any marketing of it whatsoever at all, but it would get like, I don't know, like 3 cents. Every 4 months or something like that. It's just ridiculous about I don't understand why people would do that with their film, unless like you just don't care about money at all and just want people to see it. Cause then that's a great way to get, they have a huge audience, but
yeah.
So we put it on for rent at like, I think it was $4.99 to rent HD and then like $15.99 to buy.
Nice. And then how long has the movie been out?
We released it February 26th of this year.
Nice.
Yeah, and we had, you know, we were doing, I, for whatever reason, people laugh at me when I tell them this now, but I mean, our family, we use iTunes for movies, so I thought people use iTunes for movies. So I was really pushing for, I know, right? So we were pushing for people to pre-order, and that was also, for whatever reason, people couldn't pre-order on Amazon. It was only through iTunes. So, but people could pre-order, so we were really pushing on that to try and get on some sort of like new and notable, make a dent, you know, some sort of list to get attraction or whatever. And it ends up we pre-sold, I think the number was like 89 copies of the movie, which got us like, I think the highest we were was like number 20 on the new releases within drama. But it wasn't in, you know, it wasn't within a top 10 thing that would make a dent. But our, by far our bigger, Amazon has brought in 4 or 5 times the amount of money that, iTunes has brought in. And then Google Play, I think we might have made our money back from putting it on Google Play. I don't know if we've crossed that threshold yet.
So, like, can you talk about the numbers that you've seen from Amazon and from iTunes? Like how much sales have you gotten by doing it on your own for whatever it is, like 5 months now, almost six months?
Yeah. So, yeah, let me pull up. Where'd you go?
So, well, like 4 months.
Yeah, so we've, through June, yeah, so it's like 4 full months, and then like, you know, February was 2 days worth. But because of the pre-sales, we actually made more on iTunes those first 2 days than we did the whole rest of the time. But total for iTunes, we brought in like $2,000. Amazon has brought in $9,000.
Oh, nice.
Google Play is about like 500, just under 500. And then we also have it with like VHX on our website, which is like 90 bucks. We haven't made our money back from getting it on VHX yet.
But you've proven that your film is worth more than $4,000.
It is worth more than $4,000. Yeah.
That you got.
Yeah.
That's which, awesome.
So, and this is, again, like I'm also realizing that this is a, I mean, it's a long-term thing. You know what I mean? Like, this is there in the world now. I think, like, again, the mentality thing, like, so much of my energy was to, like, getting it out into the world. And now I'm, like, and now that it's done, and thinking, like, oh, now it's done. But no, like, that's, like, the very first step. You know what I mean? Like, getting it out for people to see is the first step. And then people can hopefully start seeing it and telling other people and whatever. So,
but also don't drive yourself crazy, because this is the first in a canon of films that you're going to make.
I've definitely moved on mentally from this, like, and as in, like, this is a fantastic experience, and we made something that we're all really proud of, and let's do another one.
Nice.
But also, yeah, trying to set myself up to at least recover our money, because, like I said, like the first half of that money came in through donations, but the second half of it, my wife and I put in on our own, took out some loans to do it. So, you know, I mean, like, we need to recover that money, and then we'll be like, whew, okay, that chapter is definitely done.
Right. So one last question about the release. Like, what kind of promotion did you do when it launched on Amazon and iTunes? Were you like hitting Facebook every day, like emailing people every day? Like, what was your strategy?
Yeah, I was definitely approached it as another crowdfunding campaign, you know, which if you've done a crowdfunding campaign or planned for one, it's like a month and a half or 2 months of like very full-time work. So yeah, we did like a launch party here in Lakeland, that we were like kind of building up towards. I mean, one of the coolest things about this movie is how our home community came behind us and helped us and supported us during the making of it and throughout the whole thing. So, that's how, you know, that was definitely the biggest boost on the pre-orders, were the personal relationships that we had and the, you know, the audience that we've been growing over the past several years. You know, I think we have like, it's not a ton, but we have like 2,000 Facebook fans or likes or whatever. And so, and I think 1,000, 1,500 like emails on our email list. So
nice.
Using those two things were definitely our most positive response. And yeah, it was a lot of talking about it a lot, but trying to be creative in the way that we talked about it. So it's not just like, hey, come buy our movie thing. But we would try to create some videos. We would do Facebook Live things every so often, as much as we could, with some actors from the movie if they were in town, or if we were meeting them for something, or, you know, doing those sort of things to try and continue the energy behind it. But something that was hopefully a little bit more than just come buy our movie. Of course, we'd always put the come buy our movie in there somewhere.
Right, right.
But yeah, nice. So we were pushing before that for the whole, all the way, you know, like I said, for iTunes pre-orders. And then after that, it was kind of like a all digital, you know, just pushing for it on all the platforms. And once we saw how big Amazon was, now we pretty much just push everyone to Amazon to try and keep that momentum going.
Well, Kevin, I wanted to thank you. Just, I know we're wrapping up, but also just thank you for sharing numbers, because I feel like I meet a lot of filmmakers every day who are like, I'm going to do micro budget because without a doubt, I'll recoup. And I think that's really dangerous thinking in this, right, in this economy. And I think every time someone shares information, other people have a more realistic grasp of what's possible and the risk they're taking. And ultimately, it sounds like you made the right decision in making this film. But I'd be curious to see, you know, knowing how you did financially and how the experience was emotionally, would you do it again?
Yes, absolutely. And I don't, I mean, I'm sure there are, I haven't really thought through every step on what I would do again, but of course I would do it again. I mean, like how, I don't know, the experience of having a movie made, just like knowing that we've done this thing together is pretty awesome. I mean, personally, it's the biggest accomplishment I've ever done in my life, you know? So it's like, it's this huge accomplishment that I'm incredibly proud of. The month that we were on set was like one of the best times of my life. You know, that whole experience, our cast and crew and everyone was absolutely amazing. And it was such a fantastic experience actually making the thing. Post-production, of course, was longer and harder than I expected it to be, but yes, of course I would do it again. And I plan to do it again, but,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, you hear from a lot of filmmakers that like their first movie can destroy them sometimes. And it sometimes takes a long time for a filmmaker to come back and make another movie. If they ever do, lots don't, you know? So it's awesome. I think that's like, you know, probably the best takeaway is that you really enjoyed the experience, you know, for what it was, and you made a movie that you're proud of. I think that's like, I mean, to me, that's like the most encouraging thing to hear, basically, because like there's so many times where you don't hear that. And I think that's what all, if I get anything from when I finish my film, I hope those two things are how I feel, that I enjoyed the experience and then I'm proud of the work that I did, because that's all that really matters.
You will. I have no doubt. I have literally no doubt.
All right. Well, Kevin, where shall people go to find out more about At the End of the Day? Like, plug all the stuff.
Yeah. So on all the social media platforms, everything, we're endofthedayfilm.com or endofthedayfilm. And then our website is endofthedayfilm.com. And then my website, if you want to connect with me at all, is kevinobrien.film.
Awesome. Liz, can you do this outro?
Sure. Well, I have to read something. Yes, I'm reading something for this outro. Hi. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Kevin for being on the show. You already said that already.
Yeah, that was a trick one.
But I wanted to say thank you for having me on the show and letting me co-host.
Oh, of course. Anytime, Liz. You know you have an open doors. The door is always open to you on this show.
So. Woohoo!
You got to keep going. There's more.
No. Oh, the pressure. Okay. I got it. I see what we're doing now. Hey guys, check out our website, makingmoviesishard.com, where you can find links to things we talked about on this episode. If you want to get in contact with us, send an email to podcast@makingmoviesishard.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Okay. At MMIH Podcast.
And I'm Alric B on Twitter and Instagram. And Liz, you are?
Just email me, lizmanischel@gmail.com.
You don't want people to go to your Twitter or any of that stuff?
You're I made it private, which my like semi-mother-in-law noticed private? Recently.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, wow. I'm submitting for opportunities, and I don't want people to see me complain about being a mom all the time. Huh. So.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, because you're such a big presence on social media normally. For you to go private, that's kind of nuts.
If things fall through in the next few weeks, I will go all open again. But just while I'm submitting for things, I'm closed.
So that's a whole other podcast. We'll have to talk about that later. But yeah, and then if you like the show, leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. We also have a Patreon page. Check that out. And Liz, thank you for another fantastic episode. And Kevin, thank you for being on. Sorry it took so long to get you on the show. We finally did this. It was fantastic.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks. It's been a blast. I'm sorry we couldn't connect at Brave Maker.
Yeah, we like kind of met at this film festival really briefly. We were like standing next to each other, and I maybe said like one word to Kevin. I knew exactly who he was.
You did. I didn't hear it at all. I would have responded.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, because Tony, who's another guest of the show, he was doing his thing and, you know, whatever, talking to the audience. And we were just standing there next to each other on stage. And I just, yeah, I wanted to say, hey, Kevin, so nice to meet you in person. But then, yeah, I missed you at the party. And anyways, but it was good to like actually just see you and put a face to the name. That's always nice.
Yeah. What's funny is that like for some reason, like I've listened to the podcast for a long time. But I had never seen a picture of you.
Oh, really?
So I did not put your voice to your body. And I'm an idiot. Because I knew that you were going to be there doing this podcast thing as part of this, whatever. I did not, until I was like done, I was like,
what
oh, that's
Ulrich. What does Ulrich's voice look like to you, Kevin?
I don't know. I actually thought you were younger. Oh, I don't wow. know. Like, I don't know. It just, I don't know.
That's hilarious. Yeah, it was funny because another guest of the show, Alex Ferrari, was there too. And we actually talked a little bit on stage and got to hug and said, what's up? But then, you know, there was this party I couldn't go to afterwards. I thought I was going to go to and I didn't go to. So I was looking forward to trying to connect with those you and Alex there, but just didn't. But anyways, it was a good time.
It was a good time.
This is a weird outro, but
sorry, I sabotaged
anyways,
it right
guys,
at the end. Sorry.
I guess what the point is, go to film festivals, talk to filmmakers. It's a great old time.
All right, it is time for the game. So if you're a first time listener, which I hope you're not, but if you are, this is a game that our producer Eric Toms invented, which basically challenges Liz and I with a filmmaking quandary, a scenario, a situation that we have to solve. Because as we all know, making movies is crazy, hard, surprising. There's always a challenge you cannot anticipate that's going to come up. So he likes to come up with these unanticipated challenges that we have to solve. Liz has not heard this question before. This is completely blind. She's going to answer on the spot. And then afterwards, I will give my answer too. But here we go. Here is the question of the week. You've assembled a team for your next feature, but you've been struggling to find funding. The story is a Me Too story where an actor is accused of sexual misconduct and the fallout from the accusations. You are approached by a once prominent A-list actor who he himself was Me Too'd due to allegations of sexual misconduct, who would like to do your film. After asking around with a few financiers, you discover their name is still enough to get full financing for your film. Your fear is that their besmirched name will mar the release of your film and may even cause a backlash. It may hurt your reputation as a filmmaker willing to work with such people. Do you, A, hire the actor, knowing it will get you funding for the film, but may hurt the film's release and even your reputation? B, pass on the actor and continue to look for funding another way, despite the fact it may take many, many more months or years? C, other. What do you do, director? What do you do? Producer's note. In the past few weeks, one of the hosts has been dodging the question or answering so far out of context of the original question that it makes the game itself moot. I will not name her, but the producer asked that the host answer the question within the framework in which it was asked.
Yes. I've been waiting for Eric to call me out. Like, I've been like, this is very appropriate that he has done this. Thank you, Eric. No, I'm sorry, not to out myself. I mean, I'm sure it just really wasn't obvious at all who he was talking about. So
I'm curious what role this actor is cast in. Is he playing the character who is the perpetrator in the movie that I'm making, or do we not have that? We don't have that information, right?
I think it is the lead character who is Me Too'd it was what I'm thinking.
I don't want to get in trouble again, so I'm going to try to play this by the book. Maybe I shouldn't even let that context influence my decision. But I would cast that actor and go with the financing that that actor provides, because I think it's really interesting context to bring to the movie, and it creates a dialogue. You know, it's stunt casting. It's bringing in someone who has associations for the purposes of bringing those associations to the film. That being said, if there are allegations of inappropriate misconduct associated with this actor, you bet your ass I'm going to have like an intimacy coordinator there, or I'm going to have extra protections for any actor who has a scene with this one actor who has allegations against him, in order to make sure everyone's comfortable if needed. But I have no problem casting people who have rumors associated with them. That's not enough for me, right? And if it gets me financing, then I'm going with them. What do you think, Ulrich?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, allegations. I feel like that's one thing versus like actual proven, like, you know, they've admitted to it and then they are, right, you know, or they went to prison or whatever, you know, the situation. I think that's a little bit different. But yeah, I think I'd probably do it. I do think of that scene. Have you seen Dream Scenario? I'm sure you
have. I'm dying to.
I just watched it last night. But there's a scene that I think about in that movie that is, because there's some similarities to that film in this film, or this question.
This imaginary film that Eric has constructed.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think I would do it. I think I would hope that the movie is a good movie and that it's not at all. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he didn't say that it's a movie like, you know, like bringing this up, like, you know, like, oh, about Me Too, the Me Too movement, and like, you know, besmirching the Me Too movement, right, or like somehow like, you know, whatever, like trying to stand up for people who've been Me Too'd or whatever. Like, if it's that kind of movie, I think I might like back away slowly.
Yeah.
But if it's just a movie about it and it's an honest and it's, you know, it's not trying to paint it in a positive light or a negative or whatever, if it's just like, whatever, like an acceptable story about this, and I think I would be okay with it. But if it was a chance at like somebody who's like been, you know, canceled and then like trying to uncancel them through this movie or something, and then like also like downplay this whole movement and like, you know, look at it as like something that it was a negative thing, all the, you know,
yeah,
then I think I would have to slowly back away. Yeah. I don't know if that's working within or without. Maybe I'm going to get outed next week as not being playing ball with Eric.
I was thinking that to myself. I was like, are we? Yeah, as long as they're a good actor, right? And as long as the film has a thoughtful exploration of a topic, so it's not one-sided and is complex, then, you know, it's like, it's very hard to find a faultless human being, and a faultless actor, I would say, is equally difficult. And without any proof of their difficulty. I mean, I brought this up before, but I had an attached actor for my projects who did get canceled, and it wasn't my choice, but we had to back away from his attachment. And I always hated that. I was really, really bothered because that actor could have financed our entire movie, right?
Yeah.
For like a few tweets that weren't, I mean, I wish I could just say, but they weren't racist. They weren't sexist. They were just like running towards the questioning of Big Pharma. And like, I don't know. Let's live in a rehab culture instead of a cancel culture.
Is that person truly canceled, or are they just like in a little hot water for a minute and then like they'll be fine?
I don't know. What? Like the way that they might not be canceled. They might be totally okay. And then we
don't think they're really
canceled. Fast.
I think they were canceled for a day, and then like now they're not canceled anymore.
It just bothers me, like, because as filmmakers, again, I'm just like, what? There's a green light and we're not going towards a green light right now. Let's just go towards green lights as long as people are safe on set, right? As long as people are safe,
yeah,
and they're good artistic decisions that are being made.
Yeah, I just wouldn't want to be involved with a movie that's like, you know, somebody who was actually canceled, like using it as a soapbox to like talk about how unfair they were treated and blah, blah, blah.
Totally.
Then I would be like, that's not something I want to be involved in.
That's crapola. And especially as a dude, I'm sure you're more worried about that because I think they might give me a longer leash if I meet a movie that they'd probably be like, is that a parody? You know, like, is this a dark comedy? You know, why would a woman make a movie like this? There might be harsher on you if the film ran in that way. Who knows?
Yeah, it's just interesting. It's like this whole conversation is just making me think about how like I'm not interested in making any movie, right? Like I think before, like maybe years ago, I'd been like, yeah, I'll make whatever movie anyone hires me to make. Like, let's just go, you know? But like, I think now it's just like, I'm much more interested in making a certain type of movie. And if that's, I don't know, we'll see. The day I get, you know, offered to direct a movie that's not a type of movie I want to make and I turn it down, then I can actually back this up. But this is sort of how I feel now. It's just like, it's got to be the right thing, you know, in order to spend all the time, effort, energy, you know, missing your children, all that stuff. It's like, it's got to be worth it. But yeah, what would you folks do in this question, in this scenario? Would you do the movie? Would you not do the movie? No one has ever given us their side of this. Maybe once, but like very rarely do people actually respond to these questions. But I hope someone does. But if you want to, or you want to ask us anything else, make a topic suggestion, you know, berate us for something we said weeks ago that we forgot already, you could do so by writing us at podcast@mickeymoviesishard.com. Or if you really like the show, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, which would be fantastic, or a rating. Ratings are good too. You can also check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at MMIH Podcast and YouTube at Mickey Movies is Hard Podcast. Thanks to our editor, Jeff Reimer, for doing the editing. Thanks to Robert Jones for doing all our social media. Robert Jones, I think, is in Italy at this point, which is amazing. I hope he's having a blast. He did all the art ahead of time because he's just a sweet guy and amazing. So I really appreciate that. And thanks to our producer, Eric Thomas, for being awesome and coming up with such great questions, whether we dodge them or not. We love them. Thanks to you all for listening to the show. And we'll talk to y'all next week.